Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Tom.
Hi, I'm Stephanie.
And today we're going to finish up our literature unit for this month. And hey, you're probably stuck at home during Chinese New Year, although I guess today is Thursday, so work and school should have resumed by now. So in any case, maybe you got time in the evenings, who knows. But we've been talking about Light in August, the novel by William Faulkner, and in our first day, we summarized the story for you. It was kind of complicated. It was a story about marriage and betrayal and childbirth and racism and all that kind of stuff. And then last time in our program, we talked about the author himself. He's a Mississippi boy, and he was quite prolific. He wrote lots of short stories and novels and things like that. Where today, we're going to return to our featured novel, Light in August, and talk about some of the ideas in this book and why you might want to consider reading this book.
Yeah, so like we always do, guys, we're going to read through this lesson and then we'll be back to talk about it.
In Light in August, Faulkner examines his perceptions of the South through his characters and their interactions with others. One way he does this is through their personal histories. For instance, Joanna inherits her family's legacy of fighting for abolition, which she is both proud of and burdened by. Joanna believes it's her obligation to commit her life to this cause. Consequently, she often acts as if she's made a huge sacrifice to carry on this legacy, which often does more harm than good. Ultimately, though she believes she's doing right, her attempts to improve Joe Christmas end in tragedy. Joe Christmas, whose personal history is steeped in racial violence and abuse, spends most of the novel searching for some meaning to his misery. Additionally, Faulkner focuses on his characters' personal identities. Southern society attempts to force the characters to live by strict social and moral codes, often based on their race or gender. However, they each reject these prescribed identities in their own way. For some, such as Joe Christmas, this has disastrous results. His inability to live by the codes set for either race ends up destroying him. Lena, in contrast, finds freedom when she rejects society's identity for her. Though others criticize her untraditional relationship with Byron, Lena finds comfort and happiness in this life. Finally, Faulkner explores the isolation that many outcasts of the time would have faced. Living on the fringes of society, the characters exist in their own personal bubbles. Lena learns that relationships with others, such as Lucas Birch, often bring resentment and pain. Upon discovering that she's better off without him, Lena leads a much easier life. Joe Christmas, having been mistreated his entire life, also finds protection in isolation. It's when he lets his guard down with Joanna that the lonely yet safe world he's built for himself starts to unravel.
Let's take a look at some of the themes that you'll find in this book, Light in August. In it, Faulkner examines his perceptions of the South through his characters and their interactions with others. When you talk about someone's perception or perceptions, it's countable. It can also be just non-count, but it's usually countable. You'll see an S on it. It's your ability to use your senses, and that's your sight, your hearing, your awareness of touch, all those senses, that you become aware of something. So it's almost like how you see something, your viewpoint, but it's all of those senses working together, your perception of something. So he grew up living in the South his whole life, except for a short time in Hollywood, and he probably understands his Southern upbringing pretty well. If you've spent a lot of time there, you understand the people, how they think, how they relate with each other. And he's looking at the South through his characters. So you see some of that flavor of the South through the characters. And also how they interact, how they relate with each other, the kind of relationships they have.
Okay, and one way he does this is through their personal histories, which means their stories, basically, where they're from.
Their background.
Their background, etc., where they grew up, the kind of friends they had, where they went to school, the things they were interested in, etc., etc. And for instance, here's an example, Joanna inherits her family's legacy of fighting for abolition, which she is both proud of and burdened by. Mm. So that's her past history here. She inherited her family's legacy of being abolitionists. Remember, we talked about them. They were opposed to slavery, and they wanted to get rid of the system of slavery that the South defended during the Civil War. That's what the Civil War was all about. The South wanted to keep their slaves. The North didn't want them to have slaves, and that's why they fought this very bloody war. Mm. But indeed, her family, they were against slavery. They opposed slavery. They wanted to get rid of it. They wanted to abolish slavery, and she inherited that legacy. Her parents, her grandparents were all abolitionists, so she's an abolitionist as well.
Notice here we've got this sentence that also has two different prepositions used together quite closely. So let's look at this. She was both proud of this legacy and burdened by. We have to have two different prepositions because you couldn't say is both proud and burdened of or proud and burdened by. That's wrong. So she's proud of this legacy, but she also feels burdened by it. So this isn't a correct way to write a sentence. Look at that because it's a little bit more complicated for second language learners. You guys really aren't second language learners. You're like fourth language learners. You have so many language skills here. Mm. So if you're burdened by something, guys, think of rocks just weighing you down. You're carrying something really heavy on your back. And oftentimes, instead of saying someone's burdened by something, we'll indeed say they're weighed down by their guilt, or they're weighed down by debt, or they're burdened by their shame. So it was hard for her. She appreciated the legacy, but it was also something that caused her a lot of grief, a lot of turmoil.
Because most of the people around her were not abolitionists, so she was burdened by that every time she mentions that. Well, you know, my grandparents were against slavery. Oh, they were, huh? Wow, we don't want to be friends with you. So she was burdened by this legacy of fighting for abolition, at least at the time.
Uh-huh.
Joanna believes it's her obligation to commit her life to this cause. So she learned this from her parents and her grandparents, etc. So she thinks it's her duty, it's her obligation to commit her life to this. She needs to fight for the freedom of people, to fight against slavery and stuff like that. That's her obligation. Obligation, of course, means you have to do something. It's kind of like a burden, but basically it's something that you're bound to do. You have no choice.
You have a duty to do it, yeah. It's her duty to commit her life to this cause. Consequently, is a word we use that links two sentences together. So because of what you know about her obligation to abolition and her legacy, what's the result? She often acts as if she's made a huge sacrifice to carry on this legacy. Instead of consequently, you could say as a consequence or as a result. Those are both phrases that you'll often see. So again, connecting these two things, what happened and the result, the cause and effect, you could also say. She acts as if or like she's made a huge sacrifice to carry on this legacy. If you carry on with something, you continue doing something that was started in the past. Perhaps it was begun by other people, which it was, her parents, right? So she's carrying on this tradition or carrying on this legacy. She's continuing on in it, which often does more harm than good. Hey, living in the South, that would be tough. The feelings towards the Civil War and slavery were still pretty strong in the South, even after they lost. Of course, they resented losing that war. They were upset about it. But it has taken a long time for feelings to improve there. Ultimately, Though she feels or believes she's doing right, her attempts to improve Joe Christmas end in tragedy. Remember, they were dating for a while, and they were very passionate towards each other, but they also fought a lot, and they probably fought about this issue. Joe Christmas was a multiracial child, remember? He was half black, half white. So they ended up fighting, and when she pulled a gun on him, a pistol is a handgun, she pulled that pistol on him. He ended up having to kill her, or maybe the gun went off accidentally. I don't know. It ended in tragedy. Tragedy is a word we use typically when someone dies. You know, it was a tragedy. It caused a lot of suffering and destruction and distress. Could have been a serious accident. Maybe it was a crime. Maybe we had an earthquake, and it was a tragedy because some people died in that earthquake.
Now, Joe Christmas, whose personal history is steeped in racial violence and abuse, spends most of the novel searching for some meaning to his misery. Mm. So, yes, his personal history is steeped in racial violence. To be steeped in something, you could also say it's soaked in that thing. It has a lot of that thing around. We use this word steep when we talk about making tea, for example. Mm-hmm. You can pour the hot water over the tea leaves, and then you let it steep for maybe 1 minute or something like that before you pour the tea out. So if something's steeped in racial violence, that means it's like being soaked in water. He's had racial violence and abuse around him all the time. So, of course, he's trying to find some meaning to his misery. Misery, of course, is when things are bad and you're sad all the time. Miserable is a related word. Boy, I feel miserable today. I've got a cold. I feel sick and weak. I think I'm going to stay home from school. But misery is the noun form here. Yeah, he's suffering so much, and he's thinking, why do I need to suffer? What does this mean?
Yeah, a lot of people are trying to find meaning to their life, especially if they're in a situation that's bringing them a lot of misery. Right now, guys, we're going to listen to our Chinese teacher, and then we'll be back to continue talking about the themes in Light in August.
大家好，欢迎收听 English Digest， 我是 Holly。今天我们要阅读的文章是 Unit 11文学单元的第三天课程。在今天的文章中，我们将会阅读到小说作者Faulkner 在 Light in August 中所要探讨的主题。文章的第一段提到 Faulkner 常透过小说中的人物来检视他对美国南方文化的观点。我们看到第一段的第三句 For instance, Joanna inherits her family's legacy of fighting for abolition, which she is both proud of and burdened by. 例如乔安娜传承了家族为废除黑奴制度奋斗的遗风，她引以为傲亦深受其扰。动词 inherit 是继承、传承的意思，片语 inherit something from somebody 是指从某人继承某物。例如 Since Lisa inherited a huge fortune from her father, she has lived a life of luxury.自从丽莎从她爸爸那继承了一大笔财富后，她就过着奢侈的生活。我们看到这句有个动词 burden， 意思是使承受重担、困扰。片语 be burdened by 或 with something， 就是指负担者点点点或是为什么所苦。例如 ，Jack is burdened with the heavy debts his father left behind him after he passed away。杰克负担着父亲过世后所留下的大笔债务。我们接着看到第一段第五句的前半部分。Consequently, she often acts as if she's made a huge sacrifice to carry on this legacy. 因此，她常常表现得好像为了延续这个遗风而做出了巨大的牺牲。As if 是仿佛好像的意思，相当于 as though， 后面接一完整句子。As if 所引导的条件子句如果是陈述事实的话，时态要与事件发生的时态一致。例如 Because his pale face, Joe looks as if he is frightened. 乔的脸色苍白，看起来好像他很害怕。As if 所引导的条件子句如果是与事实相反的话，则需用假设语气。如果 as if 条件子句发生的时间和主要子句相同，条件子句里的动词用 were， 过去式动词 或过去助动词加原形动词。例如 My sister always talks to me as if she were my mother. 我姐姐跟我说话时仿佛她是我妈妈。As if 条件子句发生的时间比主要子句早的话，条件子句里的动词用过去完成式 had 加 VPP。 例如 Although it was the first time I met Bruce, I felt as if I had known him for a long time. 虽然这是我第一次遇见布鲁斯，我觉得我仿佛已经认识他很久了。
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
All right, let's continue with the second part of our lesson for today. We're talking about some of the ideas and some of the themes in Light in August, and we just got done talking about some of the characters and how they have these legacies that they need to carry on. We focused on Joanna there. She's proud to be an abolitionist, but at the same time, it's a burden for her because, of course, everyone around her, at least most of the people, don't agree with her, so she probably gets in arguments all the time. And actually, her life ends in tragedy. Joe Christmas actually ends up killing her after they have some kind of argument or something like that. So additionally here, as the next paragraph begins, additionally, or in addition, you could also say, Faulkner focuses on his character's personal identities. So here we've got the word identity. That's just kind of how you define yourself, how you relate to other people, kind of the labels you put on yourself. I identify as a white man, for example, if I'm Caucasian, or here in Taiwan, you might identify as an Amis person or a Kajaran or whatever. These are ways that you kind of describe yourself. You identify yourself as a certain way.
Right. So Southern society attempts to force the characters to live by strict social codes and moral codes, social and moral codes. It's kind of an unwritten system. If there's a social code, you know, if you live in a particular area, you understand how you're supposed to behave, what's right, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate or inappropriate. Moral codes, again, moral is based on what's right or wrong morally. So these characters who are in the South, you kind of have to blend in. You kind of have to do what the other Southerners around you are doing. You have to think the way they think and have the same perceptions and attitudes and opinions. But as we all know, not everyone's the same. So often these codes are based on their race or gender. Your gender, of course, is your sex, whether you're male or female. Life's getting really weird and complicated these days, though, because some people are deciding, you know, that even though I was born female, wow, I feel like a male. So back then, life was a little more simple. It's getting more complicated. So those identities and your gender are becoming, I think, more fluid, meaning they change more these days. But let's get back to this. However, it says they each reject these prescribed identities in their own way. Joe Christmas, his grandfather took him to an orphanage that was for white kids. But he's actually multiracial. So he probably had some difficulties just throughout his life growing up.
Right. So at the time, people had to live by these codes or these rules based on race or gender. Race, of course, if you're black, you're supposed to behave a certain way.
Yeah.
And gender, male, female, that's not a way a Southern lady is supposed to act. You're not supposed to do that. Or men were expected to behave a certain way as well. That's codes based on gender. However, they often reject these prescribed identities. Prescribe here just means the definition that have been provided for these identities.
Yeah, what you're supposed to behave like. Yeah.
Exactly. Or you can get a prescription from your doctor. You can prescribe medicine, but that's slightly a different meaning. For some people, such as Joe Christmas, this has disastrous results. So yes, Joe Christmas is multiracial. He's probably expected to behave like a black person. You're supposed to be subservient to white people, do what they say, don't date white women and stuff like that. But he says, hey, I don't care about that kind of stuff. I'm going to do what I want. And this, unfortunately, has disastrous results. So he decides to do what he wants to, and he doesn't behave the way he's supposed to, and it ends in disaster. Disastrous here is just describing the results. Of course, he gets in big trouble for that.
Lena, was the pregnant girl who came into town searching for Joe Brown, or Lucas Birch, his fake name. She finds freedom when she rejects society's identity for her. Though others criticize her untraditional relationship with Byron, from that sentence there, it sounds like she was living with him. They weren't married. Lena finds comfort and happiness in this life. Good for her. Now, finally, Faulkner explores the isolation that many outcasts of the time would have faced. There wasn't a lot of freedom to do your own thing back then. You kind of had to follow society's rules and pressure. If you're isolated, you feel alone. Other people don't want to be around you. Isolation is the noun form of that word. So there's a lot of isolation when someone feels they can't blend in. They kind of have to withdraw. Outcast means people throw you out of their group. They don't want to associate with you. Living on the fringes of society. The fringe of society just means the outer part of society. You're not really participating fully. You don't feel like you belong. Because they were living on the fringes of society, the characters exist in their own personal bubbles, kind of like living in their own little world. They don't have a lot of interaction with other people.
Yep, indeed. They don't belong. They're not part of society in general. They are outcasts. You could also say they're outsiders. They're loners. You could say that as well.
Yeah.
And Lena learns that relationships with others, such as Lucas Birch, often bring resentment and pain. So Lena learns this lesson if you have relationships, friendship, or whatever with other people. For example, with Lucas Birch, this can bring about resentment and pain. Resentment is the state in which you really hate someone for something they have said about you or something they have done to you. So if somebody says, hey, you're an ugly pig. Hey, I resent that. That's not a nice thing to say.
Yeah. You can often resent a lot of things. Maybe you resent the fact that you were born into a family that didn't have a lot of money. And your whole life, you're kind of jealous of others who have more money. You can resent things that can bring pain, that can make you miserable, just resenting things and not getting over it. Upon discovering that she's better off without him, Lucas Birch's Joe Brown, remember, she leads a much easier life that way. If you're better off with someone, or if you're better off in a different job, it means you're going to be happier that way. You know, you may have thought that having this particular boyfriend would bring you happiness, but turns out he's a jerk. You're better off with someone who's not quite as good looking, or maybe isn't quite as rich because he treats you well. So better off. You'll see that phrase a lot. We hear it a lot. We use this in spoken language a lot. So Lena leads a much easier life, ending up with Byron, who actually is in love with her.
Right. And, of course, he's not the father of her child. So I guess that means their relationship is kind of unconventional. People there will talk about them. Hey, you know, she's going with Byron and he's not the father of her child. Ooh, that's bad. So they'll probably talk about them behind their backs. But in any case here, she finds that, hey, it's actually better. I'm better off with this guy and better off without the other guy. And Joe Christmas, having been mistreated his entire life, also finds protection in isolation. Remember, Joe Christmas is of mixed blood, and he's tried to fit in with other people, but they just reject him all the time. So he's decided to find protection in isolation. He's just protecting himself by being alone.
Right. So it's when he lets his guard down with Joanna. Remember, they have a passionate relationship and fight too much as well. When he lets his guard down, if you let your guard down with somebody, you don't try to protect yourself. You're honest and open with them, but that often leaves you susceptible to being hurt. So he lets his guard down. He's himself with Joanna, doesn't try to protect himself. And what ends up happening? She pulls out a gun and he has to kill her. So he was lonely in his own personal bubble. But, you know, it's harder that way, too. Lonely but safe. And when he lets down his guard, that's when things start to unravel. To unravel means to come apart piece by piece or string by string. So kind of sad for him.
His life starts to crumble, and that's how the way the story ends. Although we did say before that it sort of had a happy ending.
So for Lena and Byron,
That's okay for me. At least the baby will grow up in a happy family. Okay, that brings us to the end of the article for today. It's time now to listen to our Chinese teacher.
文章的第二段提到小说中角色身份认同的问题。我们看到第二段的第二句。Southern society attempts to force the characters to live by strict social and moral codes, often based on their race or gender. 南方社会试图强迫这些角色按照严格的社会与道德规范来生活，而这些规范常常是建立在他们的种族与性别上。这句有一个动词片语 live by something, 意思就是依照某种信念或原则来做事情。例如 ,monks have to live by certain rules, such as not eating meat or drinking alcohol. 和尚必须依照某些规定行事,例如不可以吃肉或喝酒。和 live 相关的片语,还有 live on something, 以什么为生,靠什么过活。例如 ,it's very difficult to live on a monthly salary of NT$10,000 in Taipei.在台北每个月用台币一万元的薪水过活是很困难的一件事。Live out something, 实践某事相当于 fulfill something, fulfill, F-U-L-F-I-L-L. 例如 ,One day I will live out my dream of traveling around the world. 总有一天我会实现我环游世界的梦想。Live up to something, 符合某事物。例如 ,Jill is a demanding supervisor. It's hard to live up to her expectations. 吉尔是个要求很高的上司,要达到他的期望很难。我们接着看到最后一段的最后一句。Finally, Faulkner explores the isolation that many outcasts of the time would have faced. 最后,福克纳探究了那个时代许多被排斥者会面临的孤立。本句有一个句型 would have faced, 助动词 would, could, may, might, 加 have 加 VPP, 可用来表示推测过去某件事发生的可能性。Tina isn't at home. She might have gone out for dinner. 提娜不在家,她可能外出吃晚餐了。另外 ,must 加 have 加 VPP, 可用来表示对过去非常肯定的推测。例如 ,My boss is very angry with me. I must have done something that irritated him. 我老板对我很生气,我一定是做了某事激怒了他。以上就是今天的课程,谢谢收听。
That is it for today's program. That is it also for our literature unit. Hey, I know you're all looking forward to our literature unit next month, so please join us then.And for our next program as well. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
See ya.